Hello and welcome to ProPublica's podcast. I'm Joe Sexton, a senior editor at ProPublica, and with me today is L. John Wertheim, the executive editor of Sports Illustrated. Welcome, John.
Good to be here. Hey, Joe.
In preparation, I printed out your biography here. It goes on for page after page after page.
I didn't do it.
7, 8 books you've written, a law degree, a journalism degree. Where do you come from, and how'd you get into the sports writing racket?
Oh, man. Where do I come from? The Great Midwest from Indiana. This is one thing I really like about journalism and media. There's no med school. There's no law school. People come from all sorts of different angles. I was in law school, worked for a firm during one summer near where Steve worked in Portland, and I found myself looking at my watch a lot, saying there's no way in hell I'm doing this for another 40 years. Next summer, I applied for an internship at Sports Illustrated. I was told, we think sports and the law is going to be an increasingly busy intersection. We had a guy named Lester Munson. I was told, go be a junior Lester Munson. And I liked media a lot more than I liked the prospects of being a lawyer. That's pretty much it. Been there ever since.
And I imagine, and I don't want to date you too precisely or whatever, but you were probably walking into a Sports Illustrated back then that was at the height of its game. Obviously, there's many generations of kids, boys and girls, who grew up reading Sports Illustrated, and then many aspiring journalists who admired the ambitions, the literary quality of Sports Illustrated. It, like almost every journalism enterprise, has, I'm sure, faced its own challenges and perils in recent years. How's the magazine doing, and how have you sort of adjusted, you know, sports writing, sports journalism to the digital age?
Wow, where to start? Yeah, I came in late 90s, tail end of this golden era of sports journalism. What I remember most is just resources, not an issue. You wanted to go do a story, go do a story. It meant flying across an ocean, no problem. Here's the extension for travel. Obviously, the calculation is different now, as basically all over media. And I don't know. I think we're all still trying to figure out where this train is going to some extent. I mean, the magazine is still profitable. That's a good thing. We're building the website and launching SI Films and obviously trying to find growth areas elsewhere. I think the quality has stood up pretty well. Sometimes we've had to be a little more creative. Sometimes we've had to turn around stories faster than we did 15, 20 years ago, where you could take that extra trip. But I think media is just in such a weird place now. And what I would say is if nobody cared about sports, we'd really be in trouble. I think now the audience has never been bigger. It's never been more involved. It's never been more invested. Obviously, print products are different than they were 20 years ago. Cable TV is different than it was 20 years ago. We're all sort of trying to figure out where the audience is, but at least they're engaged with the topic. Until told otherwise, I sort of operate from this view of, as long as you're doing quality work, there's always going to be an appetite for good stories. There's always going to be an appetite for enterprising stories and analysis. And as long as people still care about the subject matter, they'll find you. I mean, you and I came up in print. You and I are doing a podcast right now. I was actually doing a TV piece for 60 Minutes Sports Show yesterday. We have all these different platforms now. It kind of makes the game, to me anyway, it makes it a lot more fun. That, you know, there's obviously a different job than when we entered. But to me, all these platforms and this digital explosion, it's made the job a lot more fun in a lot of ways.
But I imagine, or I hope anyway, that you're as bullish about investigative sports reporting today as you might have been back when you first signed on with SI. You know, investigative reporting in sports has a long and rich tradition. Just off the top of my head, I can remember being a young sports writer myself and watching the reporters at the Lexington paper, I think, win a Pulitzer Prize back in the 1980s. Then another young reporter out in Minnesota, I believe, won the Pulitzer Prize.
George Dorman.
Right. Mm-hmm. Who went on to SI, I
he
believe.
He did. Exactly.
Are you bullish about investigative reporting and the public's appetite for it?
I'm bullish about the public's appetite. It's a weird time in the sense that, I mean, look at this Peyton Manning story and look at the attention that got, look at the coverage that got. I think the public appetite is quite high. I think you've got data has never been easier to get. Public records never easier to access. I mean, you and I could sit in a cabin in Montana, and if the Wi-Fi worked, it's amazing the amount of material we could get our hands on without doing any more work. The issue is resources, and the issue also is we know from traffic and ratings and all these sort of awful business metrics that we're not supposed to pay attention to in pure journalism that fantasy football lineups are going to drive as much traffic as an investigative story, perhaps. So I think you have these forces that are sort of at odds with each other, and I think that I'm bullish in the sense that the appetite is there. Certainly at Sports Illustrated, this is the work we want to be doing. Say whatever you want to say about the Peyton Manning HGH report and the methodology and whether or not you or I would have published that story or not published it. The response that got, I mean, that was the sports story of the week at a time when the NFL was finishing the regular season and the college football bowl games were in full force. I think the public appetite for a well-executed sports investigative story is as high as it's ever been.
And I know that as part of your sort of searching around creatively for how to get done those kinds of ambitious and memorable things, that Sports Illustrated had been open to the idea of partnerships, of teaming up with different other news organizations, whether they be sizable ones or, you know, newer kids on the block. Obviously, ProPublica's model is founded on the idea of partnerships, of creating journalism to be shared and creating projects in which the work of journalism is shared. I remember reading with great interest a collaboration you guys did, I think, with the Center for Investigative Reporting, kind of a novel, weird baseball story. Tell me how that both came to be and how you walked away from that partnership feeling about the prospects for such things.
Yeah, I mean, we're very open to partnerships, you know, especially now, especially in this era. That was Lance Williams, who was, you know, one of the journalists that did Game of Shadows. To me, Game of Shadows, by the way, one of the great sports investigative feats of the last 20 years or so. But Lance is there now, and he had a story idea. It wasn't your conventional sports investigation. It was a little quirky. It was the story. I mean, I encourage people to read it. It should be up on our website. It was a story of a Pittsburgh Pirates player who had sort of spurned a high school classmate, and the high school classmate went around saying on social media, "Hey, I just talked to my friend, and he says he's going to lose the next game." And pitcher, in fact, did lose the next game, even though it was based on nothing. That happened a few more times, and suddenly this became the subject of an investigation, and this pitcher had been essentially knew nothing about this. But it was a quirky story that involved federal agents, and that was just a story that Lance had come across and was looking for a partner to work with him and edit it and publish it, and we were able to help and provide some resources. And I think that's one area we're certainly looking to do it. We talk to other partners who are willing. I think these rules of media are changing as media are changing. And maybe when I started, maybe when you started partnering with another outlet, what are you talking about? That's your competitor. And I think now it's much more collaborative, and one news outlet can bring some assets to the table and another outlet can bring some others. And if a good story gets out there and it's co-produced, so much the better.
Right, and we even had our own nice experience doing that with Sports Illustrated.
A couple times, right?
T. Christian Miller and Ryan Gabrielson and David Epstein are among some ProPublica reporters who've worked on things that have shared either the platform with you guys or the financing and editing help. The story about the pitcher, and one of the things was remarkable was how often his record actually tracked what the specious sort of gambler was saying. Gambling, not shockingly, right, seems to be at the heart of a lot of difficulties for sports and opportunity for investigative reporting. I mean, watching the whole fantasy leagues debacle is quite remarkable to see it unfold. Have you guys dipped in at all on that topic, on the fantasy leagues?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fantasy leagues are interesting to me because of these shifting alliances. And, I mean, the NBA sort of at the forefront. Oh, think about this for a second. They were private owners of sports franchises. Bob Kraft, probably the most notable, that made an investment.
I think Jerry Jones.
In Jerry Jones as well. You think about the NFL's stance on gambling, even though we all know what the gambling industry has done for the NFL and point spreads and viewership. You had private team owners that were private investors in Daily Fantasy. We did a story maybe 14 months ago on Daily Fantasy and DraftKings and FanDuel and the revenues and these valuations that were going up and up and up to unicorn status. And, you know, at the beginning of the football season, this was the biggest story in the NFL, bigger than the Deflategate fallout and Peyton Manning. I mean, the first 6-8 weeks of the football season, Daily Fantasy was the story. Every other commercial was for Daily Fantasy. Every broadcast. I mean, ESPN at one point had, I think, 7 of their top most trafficked stories on ESPN.com were Daily Fantasy related stories. And if someone had said by the end of the season there's going to be an attorney general's, you know, cease and desist, and there's going to be this unending constellation of court cases and these companies with billion-dollar valuations, yeah, we don't know if they're going to exist anymore. It's a remarkable story. I mean, I think it's very fluid and fast-moving, and a ruling here or there will really sway things. But this overlap between sports and gambling and these games of chance, this fine line of a luck versus skill, and also the huge revenue at stake. I mean, I think one of the reasons the NBA in particular seemed to reverse their stand is because there's this recognition that gambling ain't going to go away. People's interest in uncertain outcomes isn't going to go away. That's what our, you know, a founding virtue of this country. If you can't beat them, join them. There's this element of let's capitalize on this. But I think a lot of leagues and a lot of investors too are sort of waiting to see how this plays out with daily fantasy.
So we'll just wrap up here. We like to take some pride at ProPublica in our nerd qualities. We do a lot of data reporting and poke a lot of fun at ourselves for how fascinated with numbers we can be. At least one of your more recent books, Scorecasting, The Hidden Influences Behind How Sports Are Played and Games Are Won, co-written with a University of Chicago finance professor. Tell me about that book. Sounds fascinating. Sounds nerdy. What's the thesis there?
I'll cop to nerdy. If you want fascinating, I'll take it. That was a friend I grew up with in the Midwest, and he's good friends and colleagues with Steve Levitt, University of Chicago. And basically, it was sort of, why don't we try this Freakonomics approach to sports? And why don't we use behavioral economics and social psychology and try and explain some of what goes on in sports? I was responsible for a lot of the ideas in the writing, and he sort of handled the data and the economics, and we had good fun with it. And he's works in for a hedge fund now, but I sort of have a sequel coming out soon. I don't know. I mean, to me, these books are great fun.
What did it reveal? What were some of the hidden influences?
Well, some of the things we looked at were, you know, why is there a home court advantage? Why is there a home field advantage in sports? I think we made a pretty strong case that it's really not about fans waving their arms or booing the visitors and cheering the home team. It's a lot about this officiating bias, and that whether it's balls and strikes or whether it's foul calls, home team does very, very well, and that the officials are really making the difference. Some of it was sort of classic myth-busting. You know, defense really doesn't win championships. The more interesting chapters to me were when we were able to confirm that this, yes, this really exists, but then talk about why that is so. Yes, it's true that NFL coaches are conservative to an absurd degree and punt when they shouldn't, but why is that? And then we did that. I mean, there's a recent book I have coming out, which is a lot more of the same thing, same kind of thing. We know that rivalries are good, but why is that? We think that lousy players make for better managers and star players make for lousy managers. Why is that?
Yeah, sounds almost like the subject for an investigative story. Anyway, John, thank you for joining us. Good luck with Sports Illustrated. And who knows, maybe we'll do business in the future.
I'd like that. Thanks, Joe.
Okay, well, game, set, match. Thanks for listening to the podcast, and we'll see you next week.